Hello, this is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. I have today with me Kathy Melcher and Frank Kopeters. We've become closer together recently and have just co-facilitated an event at the beginning of June in Orval, which is in the very, very southeast part of Belgium. And it was a great success, and we've had a wonderful time feeling like our work is coming together now. And this happens with me quite often, is that I'll know somebody for a really long time, and then all of a sudden it's time to work together. And this is what's happening with Frank and Kathy and I. The other thing that has been really wonderful is that they've been very close companions to Reiki Home and the RFI board, and great supporters of this vision. And also, they are in their own right educatedly deep thinkers. That's my feeling and my experience. And so I'm very interested to have this conversation with them with the topic of cosmology and should we in Reiki write our cosmology of Reiki, and if there is a yes to this, then what would be some of the components, or where do we need to go to find these components? So my idea about this cosmology thing is it's not about creating a bunch of dogma out of some ideas that we have, but it's more about researching and compiling a mass amount of experiences that actually have happened to people across cultural and ethnic boundaries, across social boundaries, and coming back to a kind of place of universality where no matter what Reiki student takes a Reiki class, they're going to find this cosmology will help them understand what Reiki offers and brings to their lives. So anyway, this is my mission these days, and I'm really happy to have Frank and Kathy here to stimulate my own understanding, and I hope yours. Frank and Kathy were interviewed earlier this year, or maybe it was last year, and their individual interviews are in the archives. So if you want to find out about who they are and how they found Reiki, you can go back into the archives and find their interviews. They're very worthwhile, definitely, to listen to those too. So here we are, Frank and Kathy, and I just had asked Frank and Kathy where we should start. And Frank started on a line, and I interrupted him because I really wanted it in the beginning of this recording, this interview. So, Frank, let's see. What was my question? Oh, where can we find a starting place?
Yes, and I was thinking about one of my favorite thinkers, the mythologist Joseph Campbell, whose line, you know, follow your bliss, I have taken to heart for many, many years, and it's opened so many doors for me. And some people know Joseph Campbell because there was this series with Bill Moyers about myth, and they were just wonderful, and they made Joseph Campbell so famous because he shortly died, actually, after these interviews. But he was, of course, familiar with the work of Jung, but he pointed out something that I found very interesting, which is that myth is not something that is false, like a lot of people would say, that myth is not real. He would say that in the myths of the people across the globe, there is numerous references to a spiritual reality. And what I love about Reiki is that people invariably have authentic spiritual experiences that make sense to them. And I totally agree that Reiki cannot be and should not be about dogma, But at the same time, it's really worthwhile to see the motives that recur in some of people's Reiki experiences. One of them, of course, would be the initiation experience,
mm-hmm.
that people are moved from a way of experiencing the world which is more linear into a more eternal aspect of it. And so people, regardless of their philosophical backgrounds or religious backgrounds for that matter, have in Reiki a number of experiences which could be called numinous. So mm-hmm. where all of a sudden a deeper reality opens to them, and it's not necessarily what they anticipated, but there they are. They often have no way of verbalizing it, but they are moved very deeply and they are brought in touch with a larger part of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so because they had a glimpse of that, so then they know somehow which way to go. And I find that an incredible contribution of Reiki, that you offer that doorway experience to people, as you say, who have no particular requisite for entering into it. Anybody can enter.
Right. And would you say that when you have these numinous experiences, which is a great word, that there is something cellular that happens, like it awakens a cellular memory in a person, and that allows them to realize that they could seek another of these experiences, and so then they actually put themselves in the position of being able to have these experiences more and more often in their lives.
Exactly. So in a certain way, it's almost the experimental method, where you either receive a session or you give yourself a treatment, and again, you can experience for yourself the shift that takes place.
Uh-huh.
And there is also, on the level of the cells of the body, a learning process that takes place. The body becomes more sensitive, more open to receive these experiences.
Uh-huh. Great. So I noticed Kathy is nodding her head, so Kathy, come on in.
Well, I was thinking that it's almost more than an awakening on the cellular level. It's sort of a remapping of the cells to this refinement of the Reiki energy that Frank was talking about and opening to a greater reality. Not to say that there are separate realities, there aren't. There's only one, but deepening that experience of contact with that which lies beyond just the physical realm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we all know that from our Reiki experiences, that in those moments when we contact that part beyond, that we're on a trail that we don't stop moving on. And
uh-huh.
that, I think, is that's the journey of Reiki mastership, too, that it is about this whole process of following that glimpse and expanding on that glimpse and initiating that whole process of self-inquiry and self-awareness.
Uh-huh.
So it's a... It's a journey that begins with a glimpse, but it's a journey that we don't know where it ends.
Right.
It ends in us being at home.
Right.
You know, ultimately at home in the universe. And yeah, I think that's what I want to say about that.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
And the thing that I would also just like to point out, or especially to the listeners, is that the path of Reiki mastership starts with first degree.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes people have this idea that, the path starts when you decide to be a Reiki master, but actually it starts really with your first impulse to take first degree, and that some people end up as masters because that's a calling that they have,
mm-hmm.
more than a worthiness issue.
Right. It doesn't have anything to do with worthiness. It has more to do with a willingness to open to the experience.
Right.
But I think from that first initiation point in Reiki 1, that is when one is really exposed to the energy, and that's where things begin to expand.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Great. So, Frank, I have a question for you, more to just go into this part about mythology, because, mm-hmm. you know, there is a lot of talk and controversy about our history. But at the same time, that is about as close to a cosmology as we have, the beginning of cosmology. It's like our creation story, right? And so it's really interesting. Like, one of the things that has happened to me, because I've been in Kazakhstan and reading newspapers and talking to people from a whole different perspective than the West, I will say. So what I realized there, for instance, is that we talked about the Silk Road and how the Silk Road was this passageway from east to west in the ancient days. Mm-hmm. And there was this woman there from England who found out that apples originated in Kazakhstan. And, of course, she thought that apples originated in England. And, well, it's such an English thing, apples, right?
Yeah.
And that, of course, that tulips somehow originated in Holland, but they didn't. They actually originated in Kazakhstan or that area. And then she ended up eating food that was very similar to some of the dishes that she found in England. And they would say, oh, yes, but this is our native, you know, food. This is our combination that we've had for, you know, centuries. And she would just go, wow, you know, like, looking at the other side of how we got our diets, mm-hmm. and how food came down and so on. But I was really looking at this piece about, we went to the museum in Kazakhstan, and their history starts with, like, I don't know, 2,000 years before the birth of Christ, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And it's like usual. Mm-hmm. And then they talked about all these tribes and how the religions came about. And I mean, it was fascinating. And then I read this article somewhere that they're actually exploring historical remnants of these Greek mythologies that everybody thought were just like, I don't know, somebody, I don't know where they thought that Greek mythology came from, but that somebody just thought them up, you know, when they were high on bay leaves or something. I don't know. You know, there's this idea in our modern society that mythology is just a myth is like something that's untrue. But in my understanding of Aboriginal storytelling and so on, this has to be an accumulation of experiences of a tribe. That's where it comes from. Mm-hmm. So I'm just wondering if you have more to say about mythology.
Yes, so there is a connection often between mythology and history, but the most important aspect of the myth, like, for instance, if we take the motif of the hero's journey, for instance.
Right.
So this is a motif that you find in all cultures all over the world, and so within Reiki, you could say that from the very beginning, a student is invited to go on the hero's journey.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Okay, so now before we go any further, you've got to summarize the hero's journey. Because,
yes.
Because one of the things that I did a while ago is I downloaded these interviews, and they were so amazing, and I really got in to the relationship between the hero's journey and Reiki.
Yes.
And I had actually forgotten about this until mm-hmm. right this very moment, mm-hmm. so I'd love to hear what you have
yes.
to say about that.
Well, in the hero's journey, you are willing, first of all, to go on the journey, not knowing where the journey will take you.
Uh-huh.
It's almost certain that for a while you will be in a certain darkness of the forest.
Mm-hmm.
that you will have to take a path that also nobody has taken before you,
mm-hmm.
because nobody else can take the path for you. And at the same time, there are elders available who have taken their own journey,
mm-hmm.
who can nudge you, who can warn you about certain things, who can try to protect you. But still, you have to take the journey.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't take the journey, you will never be fulfilled as a complete human being. If you do take the journey, it's not about where you end, but you will become a hero as you walk this journey. So this is kind of a foolproof way of doing it.
Mm-hmm. Of doing what?
Of becoming whole.
Ah, becoming whole.
If you want to become whole, you have to dare to take the hero's journey.
Mm-hmm.
But Campbell had always said that a human being or the hero is called to the journey 4 or 5 times before he accepts or she accepts.
Really?
Yeah. So all through our life, we're called to the journey, but we are preoccupied with something else and we don't hear it, or we want to ignore it because we want to keep life the same or whatever. But when we finally say yes to the journey, there's a tremendous amount of energy that already puts us into that path and kind of sets the tone for what's going to happen next. The other thing that the person has to be able to do is to acknowledge that there are others who have taken the journey and are available for help. You know how it is where you're at a certain stage in life and you don't think anybody's ever gone this way before?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm reinventing the wheel and therefore I'm anxious or shut down or closed or I don't want any help. And so that has to be acknowledged and surrendered to. So it's a fascinating combination of energetic factors that puts a person on the path.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
That combination of willingness and surrender and desire.
And that there seems to be an almost immediate response from the whole cosmos to anybody who sincerely goes on this journey. So then these synchronicities start to happen where you meet your teacher, the students meet you, there are obstacles always. There are breakthroughs always. Whatever you thought were your weaknesses turn out to be great assets at some point of transformation, so that everything has a place, everything that happened in your life and everything that's going to happen all contributes to helping you along on the journey. And I think for most of us, that's just so astonishing to see that that is what life is really about. It's not just about surviving or trying to make it, but to open to this aspect of yourself that was mm-hmm. always there waiting for you to look at it.
Well, so would you consider Reiki then to be a way for human beings to find the doorway to their hero's journey? Or would you say that that it simply contributes to their journey wherever it started?
Well, I think both. And I think that's also where people have options. For some people, Reiki will become their major path, their uh-huh. major mystical path. For some people, it will lead them to another journey. Because, of course, there's many, many journeys to be taken.
Right.
But Reiki is a full, there is nothing lacking in Reiki. If you want to go all the way, Reiki can help you do that.
Right.
As it did for Mikao Usui.
Right. 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 And certainly for me.
Right. Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And maybe for you.
Yeah.
Would you say that?
I would say that I'm not there yet.
What do you mean?
Well, in the sense that there are still many discoveries. I feel there are many discoveries that are happening in every moment that I'm on this journey.
Right.
And I guess that's what I mean by the connection to the cosmos is always magical and miraculous.
Uh-huh.
In every moment, there is some new discovery, some new facet of unity that is, you know, awe-inspiring. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, that's what I mean about I'm not finished yet.
Right.
I'm still
definitely
moving. Still moving.
Uh-huh. So being able to tell us students in the world, this may be why you are practicing Reiki, to go on your hero's journey. Does that seem like a part of what we could work into a kind of cosmology, or where are you? Well, maybe I should ask this question. So do you think that my, this kind of project, we'll label it project, wherever it goes, this project of mine to explore whether Reiki as a practice needs a cosmology of its own, where are you with that? Do you think I'm kind of going off the deep end, or
no.
Do you think that this is something that would be useful to students?
I think so, yes, as a perspective, because I think all spiritual endeavors have a cosmology in them, whether it's formulated or not.
Right.
And so with Reiki, at least when I look back on my own experience, it was already contained in the first few minutes that I received Reiki, that something in me responded to something very big,
uh-huh.
but I had no idea what it was. So then I sought out a professional session, then I sought out a class, and so in each step along the way, the mystery kind of deepened, because I could never put my finger onto it, but something was opened further and further. And in that sense, I would tend to agree with Kathy. I'm so excited because I already know that there will never be an end to it. There will
uh-huh.
always be a next step. And I think this looking into a cosmology may be our next step as a kind of a community. Just to, because most cosmologies that I'm familiar with, which is mostly in the shamanic
right.
area, are still somewhat confining. They're still trying to grasp the ungraspable within some kind of a definition. And I think that Reiki will try to define, but will never come to a complete, precise definition, because that would still be dogmatic, but we'll keep it open. And we'll always allow every single practitioner to honor the reality of their experiences.
Uh-huh.
Which is what differentiates, to me, Reiki, say, from any organized religion.
Uh-huh.
That we honor whatever it is that people experience.
Uh-huh.
We honor that. We listen to it. We dialogue it. We may compare it to other experiences. But we will never set ourselves up of somebody who says, well, that's not within the scope of Reiki. We would never do that.
Right.
Right? We would say, oh, how interesting.
Right.
And what did you learn from this experience?
Uh-huh.
Right?
Yeah. Good point.
Yeah. So in that sense, it's because even within science, the cosmologies that's being defined right now is by people who have access to telescopes or whatever, right? Whereas we have access to our own experiential systems, and we honor that.
Right.
Right? And you as the lineage bearer, I always love that you say, well, I'm the lineage bearer and I'm a student of the system.
Right.
And that's true for all of us.
Right.
So to be able to be in a position where every single practitioner of Reiki is invited to also define or explore the cosmology, I think that's a wonderful challenge.
I think it's more about exploring than defining. In other words, the blessing of being in Reiki is that there's this immense openness, and it's the immense openness that invites the inquiry that invites the questions about what is this and how does it connect to the whole and how, you know, I mean, and it is possible that some of this can't be answered in a verbal way, but in an experiential way, people certainly have their connection to the whole, and that this keeps building because, as we know, there's, as we've experienced, it continues to grow.
Right.
So that we know is true.
That we know to be true.
Yeah.
Right. Well, for me, one of the things that happens in my touring around and talking to groups of Reiki students, no matter what their level of initiation is that what I see is that we have all grown up in a world that has continued to be more and more confining and more physical or physically oriented. Like, you know, our physical body is who we are, and there's nothing more. And so if there is something more, then there's this really interesting explanation of how it affect how what our future life will do after we die physically, what will happen that will actually impact how we act in our life now on Earth. So it's a very interesting kind of what we would say, what I would say, catch 22, which means that there's no mystery. So there's no understanding of possibility. There, you only have two options. You can either go to heaven or hell. I mean, that in some way, that's a kind of weird...
In that kind of duality.
There's a kind of control that happens so that if you don't want to go one place or the other, then you end up running your life according to what you think will happen after you die.
But we don't really know that. The thing is that these attempts to physically define life's experience kind of runs counter to the experience of Reiki, which really takes us out to the blurry edges.
Exactly.
Of our existence, and you cannot say this is where my physical body leaves off and the fine stuff of the universe begins, because they're intermingled. So
right.
that experience and trying to measure it or talk about it or it's not easy. But I find it interesting that Reiki is practiced in hospital settings, you know, and in cancer treatment centers where, you know, people are on that edge between physical existence and what might be the next step and are actually having these incredible experiences of opening and moving beyond the definitions of life as we have been told it is or has been defined for us.
Right.
And I think it's important part of, you know, living with Reiki is being willing to let go of old definitions of things and to move into the unknown.
Right. However, what I've realized is that it takes another way of thinking. So what I've realized I've been doing all these years is opening up people's minds to other options of how to think about their experience. So, for instance, when I just love this story of Reiki, where in Russia, this mother and daughter took first degree and then second degree, and they just loved it. But the husband and the father, the same person, was an alcoholic, and so they asked if they could treat him, you know, for his alcoholism. And he said yes, because he thought, well, this is just, you know, fantasy anyway. It doesn't really matter and it won't work. So they treated him at a distance every day for over 2 years. And he went through, you know, a binge and then dried up and then went through another binge and then dried up and so on. And they watched this. And one of the things that I just loved about how they described their experience was that whether they saw improvement in him was not the point. It was their being able to send him Reiki knowing that it would make a difference. And he finally, after like 2.5 years, decided to stop drinking. And at the time when they told this story in this gathering, he had been dry for about 6 months, and they were totally hopeful that he would, and they are still sending, I'm sure they're still sending him Reiki now. But one of the things that that brought me to was how another person in the same situation, and there are several of these, would have sent their father or their husband or whatever Reiki for 3 months and said, okay, nothing's happening, so I'm not going to do it anymore. And with them, somehow, they got that Reiki was working, but in a way they couldn't understand. And that's the thing that I feel like, mm-hmm. Frank, you were talking about, in the sense that we've kind of carved out life as it is here on the planet, and that feels like very heavy. Mm-hmm. But somehow life here on the planet is not always heavy. There's some etheric, there's an etheric quality to it that allows us time, space, intervention, and so on. That I feel like we've, as our modern society, have kind of lost track of. And Reiki brings that back into our existence and allows us to see that there are many more planes of existence than the ones that we have normally thought of. So Reiki is giving us more options. Mm-hmm. And I realized that just conversation by conversation, that kind of opening is what I've been doing all these years. But I feel that if we had an understanding, if there was some way to articulate this in a way very generally, that people would be open to these alternatives, then I wouldn't, so this is my motivation to do this work, that I wouldn't feel so, I would feel like I could contribute to every Reiki student if they were able to read or listen to these interviews, for instance, wherever they were, Africa, India, you know, Kazakhstan, Argentina, you know, Australia, everywhere, that I don't have to be there in person to answer these questions. And I think that's been a really interesting hindsight, mm-hmm. about the work that I've been doing. I mean, I used to just think, oh, I go around and answer people's questions. But actually, I feel like what I've been doing is starting the movement so that we're able to take in another point of view than the one with which we were raised. And I think that's a huge revolution. Mm-hmm. So I feel like, actually, this whole work with Reiki Home is putting this work of changing our world, finding a new world, actually, because it's a world that exists, but we haven't known that it existed before.
Yeah, and I think the real challenge in following Reiki as a path is that it just by the nature of the way Reiki works, that what you firmly believed and clung to as being the physical truth gets dissolved in the process. And so what you thought was so becomes something else, something larger, some, you know, the idea of giving Reiki for 2 years to someone without any real expectation of outcome, knowing, you know, Reiki in itself being its own feedback loop. Yeah. You're just giving Reiki for the sake of giving Reiki, you know, to hopefully heal the person, but you have no control over what they'll do.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And what these gals reported was that one of the things that happened with them in their relationship with this man is that they kept their relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, they were mm-hmm. able to keep going in their own relationship with this person because they loved him, they wanted to support him somehow, but they also wanted to keep in relationship with him. And it would have been really easy in some of the moments, I'm sure, to just have abandoned that relationship and said, I'm out of here. But they kept being present, and that's huge.
That's
as we all know,
an immense learning.
Yeah, and so
on
it wasn't
all parts,
right? So it wasn't just there was a benefit that really was a kind of global, we could say, benefit for everybody concerned.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Did you have something you wanted to say, Frank?
Well, it points to that the people kept giving, so it means you're also in a place of not expecting anything, but you trust that what you're doing is very valuable because it comes out of a knowing of the heart. And the heart just goes by the laws of grace.
Right.
So this whole attempt to open Reiki to wider and wider energetic levels, I think, is the most incredible gift. That it's not just a hands-on where you try to measure the effects, which is great in itself, of
right.
course, that somebody heals faster. But to just see that this is a practice for humanity, you know, that you trust that the heart is big enough to encompass wherever somebody is, and you don't put yourself higher or lower. You just do it for the practice sake, that we as beings, we care deeply about each other.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that's part of Reiki Home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is not like another cult or another this or that. No, it's a deep caring, compassionate caring. And the practice is very simple. I mean, it's either hands-on or from a distance, but you share your common humanity with each other.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
And that's like at the core of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
That's what I think is so powerful about this, is that it tends to strip away mm-hmm. all of our preconceived mm-hmm. notions about who one is and so mm-hmm. on, because you don't really need language to communicate if you have Reiki.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of Reiki students are finding this out when they come to gatherings and events and so on, where some of the work is translated, but they really get that the important communication is not translated
yes.
or interpreted.
Yes.
It comes from the exchange of practicing Reiki.
Yes. And that the field in which this takes place is steeped in the sense of the sacred. And I think that refers to what I think you were saying, that the world has become so material that it's hard to find the sacredness.
Mm-hmm.
But with Reiki, the invitation is, we don't formulate exactly what it is because we can't, but still the invitation is, let's experience the sacred together.
Mm-hmm.
And when I think, you know, of these, like these shamanic caves, you know, of more than 30,000 years ago,
right.
where there are these paintings of these animals, and you could see that who painted the animals was deeply honoring them.
Right.
And it's almost it's really an initiation to be in a cave like that. You know? All of a sudden, the world, as we know it, kind of disappears into something much, much larger. And the same happens often when we give a session or when we receive a session.
Mm-hmm.
The limitations of the world as we know it, they vanish and is replaced by something unspeakable, but it's still sensible. It's recognizable as something of a different order and something that holds us and almost invites us to go further into what we as human beings are. Because I think we suffer from having a very limited notion of what human beings could be.
Totally. I agree with that. And I can see that for myself, just what I felt like I could be 30 years ago and what mm-hmm. I feel like now is, you know, enormous. Mm-hmm. What an enormous change. Mm-hmm. And now I'm looking to taking another leap
yes.
forward, which
yes.
is very interesting.
Yes,
yeah.
yes.
Great.
But it is true that when the limitations of our collective self-concept are removed, there is no limit to the potential of what we can do together. So there's no limit to what Reiki can do. And the idea of Reiki Home and a place where this unlimited potential for healing the planet and humanity and the cosmos and whatever is possible. All things are possible. That's an immensely uplifting idea.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was really taken aback when we were doing some work with Ben Haggard, when the first RFI board was formed about 4 years ago, maybe 5 years ago now, I can't remember. And he came up with a phrase that Reiki Home could be a pilgrimage site for the redefinition of the role of healer in the world.
Beautiful, beautiful.
And yeah. There was something that really touched me about that. And everybody kind of flinched with the word healer. And he said, well, that is exactly why Reiki Home needs to exist.
Yeah.
Because there's this flinch when people say healer. But he said, you know, the true meaning of the word healer is not how we use it today.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that's why it needs to have this regenerative process so that people can really get the understanding and the implication of this. And that's just what you described.
It's a reconciliation in a way of our relationship to the universe, and no longer thinking small at all, but allowing what wants to live through us to live through us.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Great. Okay, I just went out into the outer space.
Yes, cosmic.
In one of the earlier interviews, the one with Jürgen and Peter, we did this a lot. You know, we came to a place where there was just silence, and it was so filled. It was really lovely. Yeah, it was great. Well, one of the things that I'm really excited about in my own life and in my own relationship with students of Reiki is this: is that this conversation about the edge of the known and unknown worlds that we seem to be straddling these days quite readily is becoming common knowledge. It's not something that people go, oh, I didn't know that I was doing this. They really get that this is what Reiki has done, is put us on this edge place, and that some people would like for it to be really known. So I go back to the history and say, well, people would like to know that this history is totally factual. And I believe that it's based on events that happened. I believe that it's possible that we won't ever be able to prove it, but that's okay for me. But there is this place, this insistence, that it become historical, factual history, which if people actually knew about history, they would really understand that that's an oxymoron in and of itself, that there is no definitive history, because every person who would write a story about a certain event would write a story from their own perspective, and it would be only if you could read 1,000 of these stories would you start to get the actual historical truth of what happened.
Well, depending on which time you listen to it all.
Right.
Because it gets altered every time it gets told.
Because it has to do with the listener, it's him or herself.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's true, too. So I find this fascinating, you know, this piece, and that we're learning more about, I think we're starting to prepare ourselves to learn about our own, how can I say this, our own attempts to write our own history. So how this looks for me, and this happened, like popped up while you two were speaking about, I don't know, something a few minutes ago, was I thought, wow, in the next Master Candidate retreat, I think what I'm going to do is have people write their Reiki stories. like write them down and then sleep on them and then edit them again. And then have them tell to another person their Reiki story and have that person read back to them the lessons that were involved in that story.
Wow.
You know, because there's something about this exchange that we don't really see what we've lived through often until somebody feeds it back to us. So I've had that advantage all these years, is that I've told my story and then people go, oh, I was really inspired by this part. And I'm going, really?
Yeah.
Like, why would you be inspired by that? I just thought I was being so-and-so, you know, and they go, no, that's really inspiring. That's really human, or that's this, or that's that. And I feel that this has been just a wonderful opportunity for me to revisit the story, because the essence of the story that I tell is always the same. And at the same time, my understanding of my own story deepens with every time I tell it. So there's something that happens with myth about the telling and retelling, and then the ears that hear that. So it's fascinating. I'm going to have to go back and I think listen to these interviews again with Joseph Campbell, because they were really wonderful.
Yeah, they are. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the thing is that when we tell it, and then when we get feedback from ourselves, it expands our experience so that we're no longer the little person that we think we are.
Right.
But instead we've become more universal because another person is relating to the story and putting into it their experience. So when you say that a cultural myth is a combination of the collective experiences of all the participants in that culture, I can see how that is true. You know, that everybody contributes their universality to the story as teller, as listener.
And that's happening to the Reiki story, whether we like it or not.
Yeah, yeah, yes.
It's becoming more substantial.
Yes. And you know, I mean, I think that there will be even more discoveries about the Reiki story. There have been, you know, if you look at the historical Jesus and all the discoveries that they've found, you know, this tomb and that tomb and I think it's fascinating. Does it change what was taught, or does it change the essence of Christ consciousness? You know, not necessarily. It might change some of the interpretations of the words temporarily, but so much of it, you know, as we've been talking, depends on the audience, depends on who's listening. And if a certain story is told and the audience is wide and deep and receptive, it's going to be a different telling than if it's told to four-year-olds, for example.
Well, you know, I have the most funny connection sometimes, but I remember when I was a kid and heard the story of how Noah built an ark, and I just thought, well, this is really a stupid story. I mean, obviously, somebody just made this up, right? And actually, one of the things that's happening now in our world is that it started to rain like that in different parts of the world. So I can imagine that at some point in the Middle East somewhere, that this might have happened. And actually now, I've read in the National Geographic at some point, way long time ago, after that, they have found the mountain where Noah's Ark was supposed to have rested on, and they've gone back geologically and tried to figure out if there was actually a possibility that this could have happened. And this research is going on, and they're very close, if they haven't, I don't know, I haven't kept up with my reading around this, because it was just one of my favorite kid stories that I loved all these pictures of pairs of animals, you know, and the arm and everything. Mm-hmm. And finding out that actually it's possible to go back, research this, and find out if there was a rainfall such as this that created a flood.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And now I get it, mm-hmm. right? It's not just some symbolic mythological story. Mythological meaning fantasy.
Yeah. Right.
But I'm really changing my socialized viewpoint of this word myth. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I think that's really important.
Right. Well, somebody else must be thinking about this too, because they recently made a movie and of Noah's Ark. And
really?
And who was the movie star? Australian guy who played in The Gladiator?
Brenna?
No.
Anyway, it's a
right, but anyway, in the movie, he builds the ark and brings the animals on two by two, and his family says, "You're crazy," and he does it anyway.
Yeah, and the rains come, and
the rains come, and
there it is. Wow, incredible!
I wonder if it's appropriate. I have the guide, the meditation that came through on the last day of our workshop together, to read that.
Really?
Well, yeah, because it has a few references to what we are talking about.
Oh, yes, please do. You just happen to have this in your pocket?
Well, you know how...
He's got deep parfait pockets.
Like filing cabinet.
Great. Please, Frank, I just want to set the stage for this. So, when Frank and Kathy and I were working together and we were setting up the agenda for the day, Frank and Kathy mentioned that every morning at 7:15 that Frank and would be sitting and everybody would be meditating together. And then he would speak and the meditation would bring out like kind of themes for the day. So I thought to myself, right, I'm getting up at 7:15 every morning to go do this. I don't know about this. So I got permission from Frank and Kathy not to show up, just in case. And I actually enjoyed them, and it actually was a really wonderful experience. And this is the meditation from the last day of our workshop,
June. Right, that's right, the 5th.
But this is an actual practice that they do in all of their workshops. Go for it.
As one part of the journey is winding down, another part is already expecting you to take you even deeper. One piece of advice: never follow the path that belongs to somebody else. And also, never stop searching until authentic happiness is your constant companion. In Reiki, you are encouraged to trust the reality of your own experience. Cosmology and mythology are seldom factual, and they often are an important vessel for the truth. There is a remote possibility that the Promised Land is a geographical location. Most certainly, it is a territory of the human heart in which everyone is invited to enter. The plan is not for you to remain as a beggar at the gate. You can always enter through the grace and the glory of this golden moment. The Buddha in you, the Christ in you, Krishna in you, Reiki in you, is already there. This sacred earth, your mothership, is keeping its promise to take you home all the way to the ultimate.
Thank you, Frank and Kathy.
Thank you, Phyllis.
Thank you, Phyllis.
This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, balancing form and essence.